Welcome to the 51st episode of the Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name is Drew O'Grizzick.
And I'm Alex Moxon. Hi.
Hey, how's it going, Alex?
Good. How was your week, Drew?
It was awesome. How was your week?
Pretty good.
What did you get up to? I think I heard you went to Mexico.
I did. It was my dad's 80th surprise birthday party. So, yeah, went to Mexico. I've only been back a couple of days. Had an amazing time.
Very cool. So, I've never actually been to Mexico. How long's the flight?
It took a little bit, so I did a bit of a milk run the first trip. So the trip down was about 12 hours because I flew to Kelowna and then Calgary and then straight to Puerto Vallarta. So that was about 5 hours, and then I flew direct back. It was a little bit more than five.
Okay. Very interesting. So did you have Wi-Fi on your flight?
I didn't. No. Well, Wi-Fi for purchase. And that would be something that would be really awesome if we could have free Wi-Fi on flights.
Yeah. How much is it? I guess it's pretty expensive and not the best is what I've heard so far.
I think it's something like $5 for half an hour.
Oh, that's not as bad as I thought it would be. But I mean, for a 10-hour flight, that'd be $100, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I guess it depends really on how good it is, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I think if I remember right, the first couple of times I flew, I don't even think we had our own personal monitors.
Which
sucked. Like, it was a big screen, and everyone had to watch the same movies. You couldn't choose your movies. They showed, I think, three during, like, a eight or nine-hour flight.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
So things have gotten a lot better, is what I mean, like, as far as planes go. Even in economy class, which I usually fly, you have your own personal screen, and you get to do stuff. Did you have that on your trip to Mexico?
The trip down, not the trip up, though. There weren't any screens on the trip up, which was a little bit unusual, but it was a red eye. So that's probably better, because that way you can at least try to get some sleep.
Oh, okay. Yeah. How big was the plane?
Good question. I think it was a 737 coming back.
That's pretty... Yeah, so you didn't have any screens. Which airline was that?
WestJet.
Okay.
Yeah,
I don't think I've ever flown WestJet, so okay. Interesting.
They're pretty good, usually.
Oh, yeah? Would you recommend them?
I would, actually.
Very interesting. Nice. All right. I've actually... most airlines I'm pretty good with. There's one airline in particular that I just think is horrible, and I swore I'd never fly them again, and then I got Aeroplan, which only works with them, and that's Air Canada.
The
worst service that I've ever experienced, and you know, I haven't flown that many times, probably about 50 times, and I remember flying, I think, in a plane with like a goat shaking over the ocean, and that was a better experience, I think, than ever having to deal with Air Canada.
Wow, flight with a goat.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty fun.
It was pretty fun. All right, so what else, what other things did you get up to this week?
No meetups other than my regular Thursday meetup, the DDD CQRS event storming meetup. So that was it. But I hear that you had a really good meetup on Monday.
Oh, that's right, yeah. So it was Halloween, it was Monday, and it was HackerNest.
Awesome.
It was pretty awesome, yeah. It was a little bit smaller, I think, in attendance than normal, just because it was Halloween. So some people who had other plans or plans with their family probably couldn't make it. But we had about, I think we had a little over 100.
That's a pretty good turnout.
Pretty good turnout.
Lots of costumes? Any costumes?
Yeah, there were some pretty interesting costumes. The two winners were, one was a Sonic the Hedgehog, which was pretty cool, and the other was an angel investor, which is a little
nice.
Bit subtle, and I think people liked that.
I like when people have clever costumes.
Yeah.
I remember when going to a Halloween party last year, and somebody was Hotline Bling and decked out like a full 1980s hotline operator. It's pretty awesome.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
So you were in Mexico for Halloween. Did you celebrate down there?
Not really. Mm-hmm. No, it's the first Halloween that I haven't celebrated in a really long time. My dad's birthday is actually on Halloween, so did family dinner.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right, so I noticed this week we started doing we've always kind of done pull requests and had other people do some peer review, and that can be, you know, as little as kind of skimming it and being like, yeah, it looks good, or kind of going more in-depth into it and writing comments on things or sometimes rejecting things for just not working the way other people might think it would be intended. But so now we've actually enforced some rules where you need to have at least one other person approve your pull request before we can are even able to merge it into master branch, for example. And so that brings up an interesting thing. So now, because of that, it means that if somebody does have a pull request, should it become more of a priority to make sure to review that? Should we drop everything? If I see, oh, wow, pull request incoming, and I get a notification on my phone, should I immediately drop everything and take a look at that pull request or not? What are your thoughts?
It's a good question. I think if you're always doing that, then you're very reactive. Mm-hmm. And I think it's better to have more of a planned approach. I wonder if is it possible to have priority on those pull requests where it's like an emergency priority, mm-hmm. emergency fix, bug fix, something like that, where you can really determine whether or not you actually do go and drop things and attend to it right away, or let it wait and finish what you're working on.
So that's a good point as well, setting priority on your pull requests. I'm not sure what's built in. We're using the Atlassian sort of universe for some reason. So I'm not sure what's built in with to Bitbucket for that, but we could definitely, if there isn't anything, which I'd be kind of surprised for setting priority, then we could have different strings that we could look for in the pull requests, like priority, or mm-hmm. usually we have a ticket number tied to it somehow. So I don't think that would be too hard to implement. And that might be a good idea as well, because I was thinking, is it a good idea to have pull requests that need immediate pull review or peer review before being able to be merged? Isn't that kind of one of the nice things about working with revision and control, is that, you can kind of set up your pull request and then go and work on something else. And there may be, hopefully what you're working on, your next thing, isn't dependent on the other thing. But I guess it depends. And if it is, then you can continue working maybe on that branch or, merge in the changes. So, that's a pretty interesting idea. Anyway, so then the next part of that would be, and if it is reasonable to have, to maybe increase the priority now of peer review for pull requests, is it then also, would it make sense to enforce a particular time? So everybody in by 10 a.m., for example.
That's a tough call, because one of the nice things about being a developer is you kind of set your own hours, unless you're in a really corporate environment. Mm-hmm. Some people are natural morning people, other people are night owls. So I think if you enforce that, you're going to meet with some resistance. So it's always tough coordinating.
Yeah, I think there's other things, like depending on the company culture and depending on I guess like the style of development and management and whatever, then that makes a lot of sense. Like for us, I think we typically put in quote unquote overtime in ways like, on the weekend we'll have some problems that maybe they were bugging us personally, so we want to go and make sure they get taken care of. I think we end up, if you tally up the amount of work, we end up putting a lot of extra work in. So should we be required to be in at a certain time is an interesting question. But I guess on the other hand, if this comes back to the, is it a problem now if pull requests are needing to be peer reviewed and people are waiting for that? So it sounds to me like slapping a be in by this time type thing would be a band-aid on a solution. And the reason I bring this up, so this was something that kind of came up at work, and I was thinking, is that a good idea? Is it a good idea to say everyone be in by 10 a.m. because somebody had to wait till 10:30 this morning for a pull request to be reviewed, mm-hmm. During our crunch time? Or is that a band-aid on a problem and not really a solution?
Sounds like it's more of a band-aid approach. I'd say maybe be available by a certain time. But actually being in, it's tough for people. I mean, people have lives outside of work. And one of the good things about developing is you kind of keep up your skills. So maybe you're at a course or a seminar and you can't break. So all of a sudden.
Well, even that, I think we're still talking about about completely different things. So one is the time that you go into work in the morning or availability for some things. Mm-hmm. And the other is, why does a pull request need immediate review? and or what are some other ways around that?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think if you have a high priority review, mm-hmm. maybe that's something that the first available person can review.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that as well, yeah. So maybe being able to clearly differentiate between, like, as you suggested, mm-hmm. high priority and other priority. And also, yeah, maybe making that known would be a solution in and of itself.
Absolutely. And I think even having a day where you've got a day for set aside for minor fixes or maybe mm-hmm. even an afternoon so you can kind of get those done and out of the way. You know that they're not high priority, but they need to be done. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that always keep getting pushed off. Like, oh, we should probably do this. We need to do this. And it never happens until it actually becomes an emergency. So, yeah, I think that might be a good approach as well.
How often do you think makes sense to have a day like that? Like, you might call it for housekeeping sort mm-hmm. of thing. How often and how long? So would that be, you know, devote a morning once a week or 2 days once a month? Or what type of thing would that look like?
I'd say half a day every couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. But it depends on your what it is you're actually reviewing. Depends on the number of tickets you have open, technology you're working with, and how that makes sense in your system.
Absolutely, yeah. But I think that does kind of make sense. Like if you devoted half a day every couple of weeks to housekeeping in your apartment, for example, mm-hmm. you'd probably have a reasonably clean apartment. It wouldn't be super spotless all the time, but it would probably be pretty good, as opposed to if you devoted the same amount of time once a week, you'd probably be, you know, you'd have a pretty clean place and get your laundry done and things like that as well. So, yeah, I think that's kind of interesting. I wonder if that's if that is that good of an analogy and how much it would scale.
It could be.
Yeah.
And it comes down to balance. I mean, do you want to, it's nice to have a clean place and laundry done, but you also want to be able to live your life too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sorry, I can't go to that really awesome concert because I have to do laundry. I'm never going to say that.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I think sort of like integrating it into what you're already doing. And I think there's like when it comes to dishwashing, for example, there's the type of people, I don't know if these are like the categories of people and if this is a fair way to group people, but there are the type of people who seem to make a huge mess and then when they're cooking and they, I think this is a good way to take advantage of others, is that you make a huge mess while you're cooking and then you're like, well, I made the food, so somebody else should be cleaning up, or a way to kind of share the responsibility. Whereas on the other hand, there's the whole cleanup as you're going along, so there never is a mess to begin with.
So how's that an analogy to coding?
Well, exactly, right? I think that's a very good analogy to coding. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of interesting. How do you think that's an analogy to coding?
Well, I think general good practices, I mean, it's always good to have standards. At the same time, you don't want to be limited limited by those standards. So
why not? I think that's an interesting thing. I hear these things, and it goes back to the whole reasonable. You know, I hear all these reasonable things, but they're testable, right?
Okay.
And I think that, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, people had conversations, and it seemed like a lot of things were taken as fact when people said certain things. Whereas now, if you're not fact-checking, then I think that might be something. If you take somebody's word as fact and don't do any fact-checking, you're almost setting yourself up to believe something that's wrong.
Sure.
What do you think?
That makes sense. That said, there's nothing better than being able to trust your team and mm-hmm. knowing that whatever your team member says, they honestly believe that that's the best solution at the time, and you're working together to solve a problem versus competition.
Okay, yeah, but is honestly believing that something's the best solution to a problem even a valid opinion or a concern? I might not care so much whether somebody mm-hmm. honestly believes something as much as, is this a testable...
Is it true?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, good point. I don't know what to say.
Okay, fair enough. I guess maybe I caught you off guard with that. But I just think that there's so many times where... it's very easy to say this would be a reasonable solution, but it may not have, the problem just may not have been given enough thought, and there hasn't been enough of some testing put in place around it. And I think the excuse of, you know, oh, we don't have the time or the resources to try two different ways or three different ways and see which one's better, so we're just going to go with our gut and choose one. I don't know. Like it doesn't sound that reasonable to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I do often go along with it. I just wonder, you know, would it be better in the long run? Maybe we can test it. Maybe somebody has. Maybe there's some numbers out there. Would it be better to try to come up with different scenarios, do some testing, and vet out a better solution among the proposed ones, in considering the investment of actually developing three solutions or two solutions and testing them, as opposed to just one?
Good question. I don't know. I think it's really important to, as a shop, understand what's important, mm-hmm. and what your goals are as far as what it is you're creating for a product. Nothing's ever perfect in software. So I know when I was working as a project manager, we strove for a 80-20 rule. Mm-hmm. So 80% awesome, 20% wish we could do better, which is usually a pretty decent goal,
mm-hmm.
Bearing in mind that things change. That said,
also, how do you measure that? You know, how do you measure the 80% awesome, 20% wish we could do better, and the 20% wish we could do better?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's 80% of the business.
Could be. Yeah, I mean, it comes down to knowing your core domain and mm-hmm. what it is that you're actually building versus just sifting through tickets to get them done.
Mm-hmm.
Taking a step back and questioning, you know, is this in line with our values and principles and what it is that we do? I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm.
That would also be something that I would consider that every couple of weeks, half hour a day, time that you've got to do those tickets that kind of add additional support to your system. I think that would also be a good time to make sure that your priorities are aligned with your next sprint or your next set of tickets going forward.
Mm-hmm. So that's actually pretty interesting. Is that an individual task, a group task, more of a product management task? What do you think?
Good point. I think everybody on the team should be working towards the same vision.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps doing that in a different way or bringing a slightly different specialty to it. One of the best things about working on teams of smart people is you've got lots of ideas,
mm-hmm.
And differing opinions is good. And I think that sharpens you. You don't want a bunch of yes people on your team that mm-hmm. are just going to blindly follow a strong leader. I think it's important to have people that do question things, but at the same time realize that you've got a common goal that you're working toward. So I think it's very important to have strong leadership, but also strong vision that overrides that leadership at times.
Right. And I guess that in a roundabout way, the point that we're coming back to is, you know, you said it's good to have people who question. Now, is it good to come to a reasonable solution, or is it good to say, you know, I'm questioning these things, now let's build something to test out whether this is better or that's better, as opposed to just going with our gut or some reasonable opinion? And truly believing that this is the best solution.
Sure, that's a really interesting point. So mm-hmm. sometimes time is a factor, so you have to go with your gut.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you look at all good leadership and good decisions, it's usually somebody who has experience in a particular field and just knows to go a certain way
mm-hmm.
based on past experience, based on I think we should do this. Sometimes they're wrong, but I think 90% of the time, I'd actually like to get some of the metrics around this, mm-hmm. they tend to be right. And sometimes just deciding to go a particular direction is all you need to do.
Right.
Which sounds a little simple, but often that's the case.
I think it's quite interesting. And I think that in that case, maybe that's correct. I don't have any of the numbers for this, but maybe in a lot of cases it is better to just go a direction and you'll find some amount of success
mm-hmm.
no matter which direction you go. I guess that's another thing that's testable is going different directions and seeing the actual percentage of success going there. And I think things like with marketing, marketing has come a long way in that department with collecting actual metrics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that this is something that being able to harness the connectivity that you know the World Wide Web really brings to people. And getting some of those metrics has been really interesting, but there's so much more to collect and to gather. And then it brings up the whole idea of, you know, there's a lot of people who don't want their personal information, even their browsing history, things like that, available online. And I guess the ability to abuse this sort of power, this sort of data is there as well. So how do you protect yourself, I guess, or do you, and still take advantage of some of this stuff?
Well, that's a very good point. I think so big data has been around for a while, mm-hmm. and I think we have access to a lot of metrics, but we're not really using them. There's only a few corporations and companies and mm-hmm. shops that are actually using their data.
Right.
So I think any kind of data-driven decision is likely going to be a better one, mm-hmm. but then it comes down to how do you know what you're measuring is providing what it is you actually do.
Right.
So it's looking at causation versus correlation.
Yeah.
Are you taking care of the correlated variables or the what actually is the underlying root cause?
And I guess so one other thing, for the past couple of years, several years I guess now, I've been, logged in doing searches through Google. And what I find is that now I get very relevant ads that mm-hmm. I kind of consider to be news, maybe the latest, some latest technology thing that I can read up on. And I find that pretty interesting. But then on the other hand, maybe if all of these ads are the source of news for me, but they're catered to me, what am I missing out on? Do I need to get connected to that stream of everything?
Good point. I mean, if it's all catered to you, you're going to start believing it after a while. So it's nice to have, again, it comes down to differing opinions and mm-hmm. having people that are willing to question, are we doing the right thing? Is this fact? It's kind of taking a journalistic approach.
And well, I wonder how valuable that actually is, or should we all just follow this one direction that we're leading ourselves?
I don't think so. Now, of course, I said at the beginning that right. it's important to have a common vision, but you don't want blind following.
Sounds very reasonable, and I believe you honestly believe that.
Thanks a lot, Drew.
All right, I guess it's time for meetups around town. All right, so we have a pretty busy and packed week this week. As we said last week, didn't get out to much, but I got out to the Hacker Nest, which was pretty awesome. Looking forward to the next one, which will be the end of this month. So we'll be talking about that in a couple of weeks.
Cool.
But so we're starting out on Monday the 7th with?
With GitHelp and Zero Tech at Decontrol, starting at 4, runs till 6. Definitely bring a laptop to this one.
Yeah, so this seems pretty fun. It starts at 4. It's a little bit earlier, but you can go and hang out and talk Zero Tech and Git. So then from 5:30, and it looks like it's overlapping in the space a little bit, mm-hmm. Is the Rust Study / Hack Night, also at Decontrol, which is 436 West Pender. Mm-hmm. This is from 5:30. Also, make sure to bring your laptop if you're already at the GitHelp and Zero Tech meetup. You probably have it with you. Rust, I think I haven't been to the Rust study group since they've been holding it at Decontrol. I think Paul's been hosting it, mm-hmm. but it should be pretty awesome. I mean, the community's great. You can just go there and work on something Rust that you're working on, or maybe what I did was pair up with some people and go over the Rust book, I guess, online documentation, mm-hmm. which was really great. And I think it gives you it was an interesting way to kind of pair up with someone and go over things, because then you talk about things that the maintainers of the Rust docs think you should know.
Okay, cool. So you went to this last week?
No, this is it first started. We actually started it in the library.
Oh, no way.
And so we had a couple of those. And then I got really busy mm-hmm. with being on Granville Island and didn't make it over here so much for that. So so now Paul has actually started organizing it, which is great.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. So the next one we've got is the machine learning meetup group, XG Boost. Mm-hmm. So it's machine learning algorithm that is winning Kaggle competitions.
All right. So what's the actual meetup name?
A machine learning meetup group.
Right. Okay, great. The machine learning meetup group. And I asked this because I think this is actually cross-posted in a couple of the other ones that I think happen to be organized by Reaver,
mm-hmm.
a good friend. So that probably not too much of a coincidence. This looks pretty awesome. The machine learning algorithm that is winning Kaggle competitions. All right. And this mm-hmm. is going to be presented at Unbounce, which is the fourth floor, 401 West Georgia, from 6 p.m. No need probably to bring your laptop to that, but if you want to take notes, I probably would bring mine anyway. I might not even pull it out.
Very cool. So next up, we've got Polyglot Vancouver. I'm not sure how to pronounce this.
Great. So we've got the Polyglot Vancouver Reading Group.
Yes.
And that is happening at 6 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
over at Stage 3 Systems, 220 750 Hamilton Street. I've never been over to Stage 3, so that might be a good way, a good chance to check out their office. So there is a paper. Make sure to read that. Starts at 6:10. It does say don't be late with an exclamation point, so make it a point not to be late. And the discussion lasts for about an hour and a half, depending on the paper. But make sure to read the paper before you arrive. There's some introductions. You just give your name and your background. First impressions, like 1 to 2 minutes of what you thought about the paper. And then there's more of a structured review. That sounds really cool. Yeah, I'd definitely like to make it out to one of their reading groups sometime. That sounds awesome.
Definitely. So the next one is the UX Book Club Vancouver. Location is shown to members. This is 6 o'clock to 8 p.m.
Yeah, so this sounds pretty cool. If you're if you've got any UX books, I guess it might be pretty awesome. And it looks like what they do is meet up and talk about some of the different books. This one is about the book 42 UX Masterminds Tell Personal Stories of Their Exciting Lives as User Experience Professionals. And it continues from there. But it sounds pretty awesome. So UX Storytellers Connecting the Dots.
Nice.
Yeah. Very it does cool. Look like here you can download the free PDF or ebook as well. So it's not like it's hard to gain access to that.
Awesome.
And then from 7 p.m., there's the Van Lug board meeting. So I've never gone out to this either, Vancouver Linux Users Group. Have you ever gone to this?
I haven't.
No. And especially a board meeting. I don't know how fun that would be. But it might be really interesting. It's a monthly board meeting. It does say, like, this is an automated schedule.
Mm-hmm.
It does look like 4 people are going, though. Maybe we can ask Peter about it, because I see he's signed up to it.
Sure.
How this goes.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea, if you've got board meetings with groups, to go, even if it's something that you're slightly interested in, because I think you can affect the vision.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit leery for that sort of corporate oversight to groups like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important if you've got a community and you do need to set some kind of boundary or direction.
What do you mean by corporate oversight to groups?
Just that, you know, we've got minutes, we've got this, we've got, you know, you need to vote to have ideas. I mean, it's important, but I think you can get caught up in the structure too much.
Okay. Yeah. So that's kind of interesting. I often hear the word corporate, and if I hear it in a distasteful manner, I often question why. Because my idea of corporate is cooperation on a large scale.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that's whether that's how it always works or not. I think that's kind of how it's intended, but maybe not.
I think it's how it's intended, mm-hmm. but often that's not the case, which is why I think I tend to shy away from stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's important if you are creating the community to make sure that you're involved.
Right. That's actually an interesting point. Why do you think it's often not the case?
Usually you've got people that have really strong ideas,
mm-hmm.
And they almost don't care about what actually happens, which is really unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you take a more community-level approach versus just somebody who's trying to focus on their KPIs and things like that, which is important, but you don't ever want to sacrifice your community for that.
Yeah. I think it's kind of interesting. I think I'd agree with it. It sounds kind of reasonable that in a large enough group, people are more concerned about themselves than the group.
Definitely.
And smaller groups could faction off from them and whatever without really any harm to self. And that's I think that's just something that is very difficult to organize and maintain a large group where it's still beneficial for the individual. More beneficial for the individual to contribute to the group than a smaller maybe subset of that group or themselves.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So, yeah. Interesting. So then the last one on Monday, we have the Vancouver Hackspace. This is over at 104 1715 Cook Street from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And what's happening? It looks like this is the Learn Computer Programming with Python that is still full, so unless you're already part of it, you're not going to be able to go to it this time.
Nope.
You might reach out to them and see if they're going to hold it again. It does seem like it was pretty cool. It was like 10 evening classes, $80 for non-VHS members, and $40 for Vancouver Hackspace members.
Very cool. And I think it's about halfway through. This might be session 5 coming up, 4 or 5.
Yeah, I think that sounds about
right. So if you have been going to this, we'd be curious to hear what your impressions are. If this has been a group you'd like to go to again, if you'd like to see them offer other courses, definitely reach out to us.
Yeah. Okay, and that was Monday the 7th. So next up, we have Tuesday the 8th, and we're starting off in the morning. There's a Vancouver Pixel Crafters meetup, which is Open Coffee. So it's at Nelson the Seagull, 315 Carroll, at 8 a.m. Are you going to be there?
Probably not.
Probably not.
Okay. But one of these days I would like to start going out to the earlier meetups. Mm-hmm. I find when I've got a lot of meetup events in the evening, it comes down to I just don't have the time.
Yeah.
So, which really shouldn't be an excuse.
Yeah. I find it just comes down to I just don't have the energy.
There's that too. Exactly.
And I think that for me, I guess, yeah, I've been spending a fair bit of time over on Granville Island. Mm-hmm. And so that extra bridge to cross, even though I live downtown, I think it still just makes it harder. It's really hard to just sneak out for a lunch and learn, for example. Mm-hmm. But I think we'll be moving our offices downtown, hopefully sometime soon.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. I mean, there's lots of people that live out in outlying areas, and mm-hmm. they want to be part of meetups and community, but they can't. I mean, they've got maybe a 1 to 2 hour commute ahead mm-hmm. of them, which is really prohibitive. So it'd be interesting to see what we can do to develop a community that's more virtual and online.
Yeah. Well, I guess it also depends on where they're working. So mm-hmm. a lot of people that have chosen to live outside of the downtown core mm-hmm. Can still choose to work in the downtown core or not. I've chosen right now to work on Granville Island, which is an interesting choice, I think. But yeah, I've thought about that before as well. Like, could we make, you know, meetups more accessible? I think the React.js meetup, I think, was the one I first noticed it with, at least, was that they live streamed on YouTube. And so one of their meetups that I wanted to go to was full. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, okay. But I can watch it online. So I was able to actually, like, in my pajamas, kick back on my sofa, watch it on my television. That was awesome.
Nice.
You know, and that might be a good way to go. All right, so it looks like that is our...
That's our Tuesday.
That's our Tuesday, the open coffee. Yeah, that's our Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. The next thing we have, this is kind of neat. Vancouver Excel Power Users has a lunch and learn. This is over at the YWCA Hotel, 733 Beatty Street. This is the lunch and learn's title is Increased Productivity with Microsoft Excel.
Sounds pretty good.
Does it really?
Well, I don't know. Excel's my fallback. I always go back to Excel for mm-hmm. even, you know, creating project plans or you name it. It's just a really well-written program. There's lots of stuff you can do, and it's a really great way to organize data, I find.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I guess that, that's what it's for, right?
Yep.
Spreadsheets. I think the first really, like, killer app for computers was a spreadsheet app, VisiCalc or something like that, mm-hmm. That really made, I guess, having a computer a necessity. So it makes sense. And I think Excel was first introduced as a Mac-only program as well, which is kind of neat. Yeah, mm-hmm. And before it really became the de facto spreadsheet application. That's interesting. So have you used Google Spreadsheets?
I have.
Yeah. What do you find are some key differences that might make Excel better or worse?
Well, one thing I like about Google Spreadsheets is you can access them anywhere, which is mm-hmm. great. I do find that they don't have as many functions, but at the same time, they're good enough. They have most of the ones I would use. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a pretty decent product. And I mean, it's free. For a free product, it's pretty awesome.
Doesn't Microsoft have something similar, like a cloud-based Excel?
To be honest, I've kind of moved away from Microsoft over the last few years. Mm-hmm. I am moving more towards open source. Mm-hmm. So I have not, I haven't used the latest version of Excel I'm probably about 2 or 3 versions back.
So open source LibreOffice?
Yeah, I use that.
And how's that?
It's pretty good. Mm-hmm. It compares really well. So, and again, considering it's a free product, I think, yeah, I mean, it's as good as you make it, right?
It is, yeah. That's actually something about a lot of open source projects that I don't like is they're cheap knockoffs often, right? Like, and especially something like LibreOffice, which is probably a great office suite, but still, does it add anything to spreadsheets? Does it have different things? Does it have a better look at a better feel than maybe something else that's out there? Or is it just following in the footsteps of Microsoft's Office?
Right. Good point. And maybe that's something that we need to strive as an open source community, is creating something that's really cool and different.
Yeah,
so
maybe
people choose to use the open source product versus the paid product.
Right. Well, I also think that like open source versus paid is not a thing. Those aren't the necessarily the comparables.
Okay.
Open source versus closed source,
right.
I think are more opposites. And yeah. I don't necessarily think that something has to be open source or not either, but I'm not sure if I buy into that school. I do definitely like open source and the idea of it, but I don't know that it always makes sense. And that's something that I think is kind of interesting. Like Google's spreadsheets, for example, Google's Drive, that's not open source, but it's free.
Right.
Or is it?
Who knows what kind of data is being driven from like data collection, but who knows? Yeah, it comes down to the point that free is never free, right?
So that's an interesting thing, yeah. I think that statement can be taken and intended in a lot of different ways. So you might say, I was thinking of this the other day, the whole there's no free lunch thing. So does that imply that if you take it, you owe someone something? Or does it simply just mean that somebody had to pay for it?
Well, I mean, yes, that's true. But at the same time, I think at some point, you can't just take. You've got to be able to give back. You've got to be willing to give back. I think that's really important, especially when you're working within a community. Whether that comes down to paid or contribution in some other way, I think that that's really important. You need to take ownership of something and work towards something.
Okay, but the whole give back is, I think anyway, it kind of implies doing something good or doing good, whereas there's no free lunch kind of, in my opinion, kind of implies something like, I want money from you.
Right, sure. And that's a different way of looking at it. It's a different mindset, I think. I think wanting to contribute and giving back is more of a creating mindset. You're building something. You're doing something positive. You're contributing and you're making something awesome. If there's no free lunch and you're focused on just the money side of the equation, I mean, it's important, but at the same time, there's so much. I mean, it comes down to the principle of do what you love and the money will follow. That's something that I have always believed in. So I think the more people are willing to contribute and help
out. And how many hundreds of millions have you made with that idea?
Right? Yeah. That's the drawback. But, I mean, at the same time, trade-off is happiness, right?
I don't know yet. I'm not,
for me,
I'm not sure I'm decided on that yet.
Okay. Fair enough.
But yeah, that's a very interesting – it is an interesting point that you bring up. And so I guess a good reason to go and check out the productivity with Microsoft Excel at the Vancouver Excel Power Users Meetup.
That's a pretty awesome tangent.
Right. All right, so let's take a look at the next one we have, which is the Vancouver Python User Group. This is happening over at the Tribe, 68 Water Street, fourth floor, from 6 p.m.
Cool.
Have you ever been over to the Tribe?
I haven't yet, and I'd like to check it out. So one of these weeks, I will definitely go to the meetup there. I may actually come out to this user group meetup.
Yeah, it sounds pretty interesting. Have you done anything with Python yet?
Not yet.
Not yet.
But that is on the roster.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good. I think it's a pretty good language overall.
Cool.
A lot of people like it quite a bit. All right, and then the case for research at startups, plus U.S. election party. So this is happening over at CodeCore, 142 West Hastings, also from 6 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And what is this? The case for research at startups.
Good question. It's first of all, it's interesting that they have the U.S. election tie-in. That's going to be, I think, the overriding thing on the Tuesday is the election results. So I'm happy to see that there are still meetups happening. With this, it says starting your own business is scary. There's so many unknowns and people with the ability to make or break your business. They're asking information and you don't know how to get to it. So what if you could reduce some of those unknowns? So I think that's kind of an interesting point.
Yeah, it's some interesting questions. What if you could help? What if you could reduce some of those unknowns? What if someone could help you? What would you want to know?
Exactly.
Neat. So there's three three startups and three market researchers talking about their experiences using market research. It sounds pretty cool. And I think it goes back to what I was saying about, you know, testing things out, getting actual statistics. And I think we're seeing it a lot, maybe surprisingly, a lot more in marketing than we are in engineering.
Interesting.
As far as building software.
Right. And I wonder why that is. Is it financially driven or is it business logic driven? Maybe a combination of both. I'm betting it's more towards the financial side, but being,
you know,
business,
what?
That's a good
maybe
thing.
It's... I wonder if this would hold true. And I guess, I mean, yeah, for sure. When you think about how much time it might take to build something out, and then you think, what is the most responsible way to build something? Maybe it is better to build out multiple ways and maybe not. And I think it really depends on what you're building. So if you're building something that, you know, like a banking system, mm-hmm. or maybe a guidance system, for example, like accuracy is very important.
Yes.
Failure is just not an option type thing. Then you're going to want to try and test it out multiple different ways. But on the other hand, if you're, you know, building out a website that, you know, if it goes down, well, you can put it back up. You want to think about that, the cost of failure, mm-hmm. versus the cost of development. And so, yeah, it must be financially driven.
So next up is the AngularJS Vancouver meetup. So this is over at Plenty of Fish, 555 West Hastings. It's a panel discussion to follow after Justin Thompson speaks. So Justin is the Senior Software Development Lead at EDP Software.
Nice. Yeah, so it sounds like it should be really cool. So there's that, and then there's the panel discussion with Gary Young,
yep.
Co-founder of Perkt, and Justin Thompson, moderated by Joel Skrepnik.
Cool.
Seems like it would be pretty awesome. Have you been to Plenty of Fish's office?
I have.
Yeah.
One of the digital project manager meetups was held there a couple of years back.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's a pretty cool space. Like, they're up on the 25th floor. They've got mm-hmm. That nice corner. And they usually have a nice selection of beers and pizzas when I was there, but I don't know about this time.
It's always a nice to have at meetups when mm-hmm. People take the time and there's sponsorship, and it just makes it a more social event.
It does, yeah, absolutely. All right, and then we've got Vancouver Hackspace Open House. Mm-hmm. This is 104 1715 Cook Street from 7:30 p.m., and that's the Vancouver Hackspace.
Awesome.
So it looks to me like if you've not been out, I don't know if this would be the best one to go to. Is this even the right day? I was looking at Sunday, November 6th, and it says Vancouver Hackspace Group Cleaning. Join tag in the space itself to clean.
No,
welcome to the space.
Right. Interesting meetup. No, it's important, right?
Right. But so that's actually not the one. This is Tuesday the 8th.
Yes.
And it's the weekly open house. Everyone's welcome. So makes sense that they would clean it up beforehand.
Yeah. But you might want to clean up after yourself. That's an important thing at meetups. Mm-hmm. You know, just general taking the time to...
Yeah, I think it also comes down to like what we were talking about earlier about, you know, people who clean up as they're cooking versus people who leave a mess at the end. And I think it's like for the individual, it definitely benefits them to leave a mess that somebody else can clean up, because then they don't have to do it themselves. But I'm always surprised when I see, you know, conscious human beings making that choice, mm-hmm. In shared workspaces, for example. Like, what would possess somebody to leave a dirty dish in a sink at work? Really? And I'm very surprised that there aren't much more severe consequences happening, like an early bedtime in Forest or something else like that.
That's it, Drew. You're grounded.
Yeah, right? I can't believe that people put up with it.
Yeah, well, I mean, people get busy, but that said, there's no excuse. I think it's important to...
People get busy, so you
right.
just
yeah.
leave a dish in the sink for somebody else to clean up. It's one of the worst insults I think you could possibly give to a place that you work. You know?
That's true. Some places do have cleaning staff, but at the same time, I mean, it's
oh, if you have cleaning staff and you're like, oh, I'm too good to wash my dish, you clean it.
Yeah, but that's an even worse problem, I think, right?
I don't know. I don't know if it is.
It comes down to tragedy of the commons. If nobody's willing to pitch out, then it just it's a sinking ship. So.
Well, I think that's just it. Like, if you clean up after yourself, you know, then you never have to clean up after others. You know, but like, so I don't like the idea either of, I think there should be probably somebody to clean, you know, maybe the, like once a week cleaning, whatever, and people should clean up after themselves. But I don't think it should be like, oh, you're assigned to clean up on this day or you're assigned to clean up on that day.
That's the worst. I've worked in spaces like that.
Yeah.
No fun.
I think that's punishment for people who are regularly clean.
Totally.
And it's the punishment of the people who are lazy and would be rude to other people by leaving things for them to clean and saying, now I'm going to do that to you once a week or something like that. And everybody's going to. And it's just, yeah, I think that's just horrible.
It is for sure. Yeah, I mean, it comes down to be a responsible human being and take care of your stuff and don't push it off so that it's somebody else's problem.
Slash end rent.
All right, then.
And that's Tuesday.
Well, we've still got, yeah, that's true. So coming up Wednesday, we've got MX Excel for Beginners and Intermediate, the Vancouver Excel Power Users Group.
So big Excel week this week.
A huge Excel week.
Yeah. So the location is confidential until registration, but this is happening from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And that's, you know, Excel's for Beginners and Intermediate. There's a lot, I guess, you can learn. And a full day on it sounds pretty awesome.
Definitely. And I'm always surprised with Excel how many layers. So if you're an advanced user in some applications, that's a good thing. But if you're an advanced user in Excel, that's a couple of levels above being an advanced user in other places.
Yeah,
so I think
for sure.
Next up, Vancouver Linux Desktop Meetup is the next one. This is at D-Control, 4:30 to 6:30. Definitely bring a laptop to this one.
Yeah, and then we've got the Pluralsight Study Group at PNI Digital Offices. That's 100-425 Carroll Street from 5:30 to 6:30. Make sure to bring a laptop and a Pluralsight Study Group membership would be good so you can follow along.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what the topic is this week, but you can always reach out and find out.
Definitely.
And then we've got, this looks really cool, the Amazon Global Logistics Meetup. So Amazon Logistics, it looks like they're probably going to be hiring a bunch of people. And I guess now that they're doing the whole 24-hour delivery or whatever it is, mm-hmm. or same-day delivery, then it makes sense. Might be an interesting team to join. This is from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. over at Amazon. This is the 14th floor of 510 West Georgia.
Cool. Next up is Learn Data Science, Data Science Reading Group. This is an advanced group. They'll be talking about multifaceted feature visualization. This is over at SFU Venture Labs, 555 West Hastings, Unit 1200.
Yep, from 6 p.m. And I'd bring a laptop to that.
Yep,
actually, you know what? Maybe not. Maybe a screen reader, something where you have your notes and the paper. But make sure to read the paper. Then we've got Vancouver Futurists, Dark Futures 2016 paid event. So what's this all about? This is over at Unbounce, which is the fourth floor of 401 West Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like tickets are 60% sold out right now. I don't know how that's going to change over the coming days, but it does look pretty interesting. It's $25 to $35.
Yeah, and this is something that my friend Nicholas Badminton is going to be speaking at.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a national futurist. He speaks all over the globe. So I guess he's a global futurist.
Mm-hmm.
He has really interesting talks and opinions. So definitely come out to this one if you're at all interested in what the future in tech looks like.
Very cool. And it looks like there are a number of speakers, and that starts from 7 over in at Unbounce, which is a great space. But make sure to register and get your ticket if you're interested. Then we've got VanBug. This is the Vancouver BSD Users Group meetup, and they're over at SFU Harbor Center, 515 West Hastings, from 7 p.m. And this is the BSD Associates Study Guide. So they're going over the associate certificate study material. Should be a lot of fun.
Cool. Next up is the VanJS Vancouver JavaScript Developers Meetup at the Vancouver Film Studio Programming Campus at 88 East Pender from 7 till 9.
Yeah, and then we've got Metro Vancouver FPGA, a glimpse at the Outer World Meetup. That's a really long meetup name.
It is.
Yeah, and I think the actual meetup name is just Metro Vancouver FPGA Meetup. But that's the today they have. Oh, this is an online meetup, an online hangout. So that's kind of interesting. Personally, I don't know if it's even worth bringing up the online meetups. It might be, because it's not actually like a location,
sure.
Right? Like Vancouver. But that's interesting. I haven't joined an online meetup. Have you?
I haven't, but it comes down to if you're stuck out in suburbia and you want to come to a meetup but you can't, this might be a good one for you.
Yeah, maybe. Or, I mean, even if you're just busy or if you're like me and you want to hang out on your sofa in your pajamas and attend meetups at the same time.
Thanks.
Okay, and so that is our Wednesday. Then Thursday, we've got a couple pretty cool meetups, starting out with the DDD CQRS ES Practitioners Meetup. This is from 5 to 7, and this is part 2 of 3?
This is actually part 3 of 3.
Part 3 of 3. Very cool. So what if you haven't been to the other two parts? Should you still go?
I think you should still go. If you go onto our meetup page, and we've got lots of notes, you can look at our source code as well. You can get a sense of what we've developed. This one is Full Moon Plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a scheduling and I think reporting as well system. So if you're interested in those types of systems, come check it out.
Kind of reminds me of something you'd hear in like a Tom Hanks movie, Full Moon Plumbing, something like that.
Perhaps.
All right. Mainland Advanced Research Society. There's a meetup from 6 p.m. over at Central City Brew Pub, 871 Beatty Street. I'm not sure if this would be a laptop meetup or not, but considering where it is, probably be a beer in hand meetup.
Mm-hmm.
But it does look pretty cool. So Van City Sec is our monthly meetup hosted on the second Thursday of the month. We welcome anyone who works in information security, who's interested in information security, or wants to hang out with those in information security.
So, I'm sensing a theme.
Yeah, the rules are pretty simple. Drinking and food, not necessarily in that order, are involved. Mm-hmm. No sales pitches, please, but bar tabs on expense accounts are welcome. And references to SOX, PCI, PIPA, or FSMA require encourage the speaker to buy a round of shots.
Okay.
Well, yeah, okay, that kind of makes sense as well.
Makes sense. Sounds dangerous.
Yeah.
I might go to this one.
Nice. Okay, and then we've got the Vancouver Closure meetup at Code Core, 142 West Hastings, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., and that would definitely be a bring your laptop and be ready to hack on some closure stuff.
Yep, for sure.
And that's our Thursday. Then we've got on Saturday, what's happening?
So we've got Camp Tech, Digital Marketing on a Shoestring Budget at Hive Vancouver.
Cool. So this is a Vancouver Pixel Crafters posted meetup, and it does look pretty cool. Digital marketing on a shoestring budget. So if you're interested in marketing on a tight budget, mm-hmm. it sounds like this would be a great one to go to. Now, it does look like this is a class with $85 registration, and there's tickets available through the meetup page. There's a link. Yeah, seems kind of neat. And this is a 3-hour event from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday.
Excellent. Sounds fun.
Yeah, and it looks like that is our meetups
it's
for
around.
The week around town.
Excellent.
And we're here with our special guest, Alan Moosey of the Ionic Vancouver Meetup. Thank you very much for joining us, Alan Moosey.
No problem. Glad to be here.
All right. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit. First of all, if we can get a bit of a background on you, who you are, and what your motivation was for starting. I'm assuming you started the Ionic Meetup.
Yeah, actually, I wasn't the starter of the Ionic Meetup.
Okay.
There's a little bit of history on that, but let me give you a brief introduction myself.
Sounds good.
Yeah, my name is Alan Moosey. Actually, I'm a Mongolian, so you can see my name is slightly different from others, and I have the same first name and last name, and again, this is a long story because of my Mongolian origin. But anyhow, so I'm a tech person.
Mm-hmm.
I will always have engineering in my heart. I started as a developer and eventually moved my way up to serve different roles in the technology scene.
Very cool.
Yeah. And in the last 10 or 12 years, I've been working mostly in a consulting firm, as I was talking to Alec a little bit earlier. I was from Toronto. And a couple of years back, I moved to Vancouver, and the Vancouver startup scene really impressed me. And I made the decision to move out and eventually do startup myself.
Oh, very cool. So do you think it was Do you think it'd be easier to do a startup in Vancouver than Toronto, or?
There are pros and cons in different areas, mm-hmm. but I see that community building in Vancouver is really, really great in the sense that, for example, Drew, you are doing a lot of the work in the community setting and helping people to learn about startup, meeting new people, and socializing about their ideas, which is great. And I find it really find my inspiration in there and decide to, you know, move out and do things myself too.
Very cool. So yeah. What kind of startup are you doing?
I am specialized in the mobile and web development, mm-hmm. Especially on the hybrid mobile development side of things. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons why I started, I was so interested in the Ionic Vancouver meetup. Mm-hmm. The story behind it is that back in, I think it's close to the end of 2015, Ionic was relatively new around hybrid mobile development scenes.
So this is about a year ago?
Yeah, almost about a year ago. Mm-hmm. And I had the mind thing, hey, let me finish off my first product development and then I'll start up Ionic Vancouver. By the time I was really close to finishing off that the product, and someone already started Ionic Vancouver. I'm like, hey, man, how did this happen? And it turns out to be a very smart fellow from South America, mm-hmm. and he wanted to move to Vancouver, and he started the Ionic Vancouver meetup back in South America. Well, he's not physically here, and we had a few exchanges. For example, Tom is my co-host, and around how we're going to set up and embrace the Ionic Vancouver meetup. So eventually, we decided, hey, since Daniel, who is the original organizer of the Ionic meetup, and decided to say, hey, let's move the ownership to you guys, and you can start doing things over there. And he decided to come to Vancouver, then you know we become a co-host relationship from there. So I eventually took the ownership from the Ionic Vancouver and start our first meetup back in May. March or April time frame, mm-hmm. and we have been doing that in every couple of months.
Very cool.
Yeah. So what is it about Ionic in particular that you thought was interesting and interesting enough to have a meetup about?
Ionic is one of the few hybrid mobile development solution out there, which offers a great flexibility and also giving a lot in terms of the uplifting from the developers, mostly from the web scenes. Mm-hmm. That's where I find Ionic is a really great framework to work with, and worldwide is one of the top hybrid mobile development framework out there.
You said one of, mm-hmm. so that means there are other.
Absolutely, there are other hybrid development solutions. One of the other very popular ones, for example, React.js Native. Mm-hmm. And there are also other more proprietary ones from Microsoft. And
Xamarin?
Yeah, Xamarin is one of them. And Titanium, you name it. Let's say for the Telerik, mm-hmm. they offer their native script nowadays. So it's pretty booming scene in terms of hybrid app development. We believe in Ionic being one of those popular ones and really offers a lot of flexibility and features to the developers.
Cool. So what do you typically do at the meetups?
It depends on the current development of the Ionic framework. Mm-hmm. So the first one was basically a brief introduction of what Ionic is about, what can you do, what do you need to prepare in terms of jumping into it. Mm-hmm. So that's what our first one. Second one we're talking about, hey, Ionic 2 is around the corner. What is about Ionic 2, how it's different from 1. The third one, we're more talking about the demo. So we say, hey, in Vancouver, seeing how many companies or how many teams are currently using Ionic, let's just, you know, try to see like a demo day of any hackathon. Mm-hmm. Bring your product forward and show it to the world and see, hey, what are the technology you use and how wonderful your product has been built with Ionic.
I heard something a while ago now, and I can't really remember the details about mm-hmm. it, but something about how with Chrome, was it with Chrome or with Android? Mm-hmm. I think how if there's if somebody's accessing a website on mobile device and the company actually has an app as well, then mm-hmm. it will preload parts of the app.
Right.
Now, is that something you can do with Ionic?
Yes, this is one particular thing being introduced in Ionic 2, mm-hmm. Which was the concept that Google brought up last year. It's called Progressive Web App.
Progressive Web App, that's
yes,
it, yeah.
That's pretty hot. Unfortunately, it's only available for the the Android devices for, mm-hmm. for nowadays. We would like to see similar progression or adaptation of the similar technology from iPhone, but we haven't seen that as yet. So, like you said, the Progressive Web App essentially is the way that you don't really necessarily have to go through the downloading, installing process mm-hmm. to access to the business logic right away. So, Ionic 2 just getting started to support Progressive Web Apps, mm-hmm. Comparing to other of the hybrid development framework, which are mostly talking about some native components. Ionic is the one purely on HTML5 and CSS and supporting Progressive Web App right off the box.
So how would that compare to something like Cordova or PhoneGap, which I guess is based on Cordova, mm-hmm. Which also is just, I guess, the more HTML, CSS, JavaScript based, but would that not integrate with the Progressive Web Apps? Or it does not yet, I guess.
The Ionic framework essentially is built on top of the Google Angular 2 framework,
right.
And as well as the Cordova as the container for container part of that application within. Yeah, actually, mm-hmm. It uses Cordova as a core to support their phone implementation.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ionic is purely HTML and CSS,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't really touch the native components at all. So it has the competitive advantage to mm-hmm. program once, and as long as you have a browser, mm-hmm. you are able to publish your app with a very limited adjustment to target different platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Comparing to other ones, let's say, for example, React Native, in its core, it's actually calling all the native components.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really supporting the Progressive Web App from its setup.
Right. So with React Native, mm-hmm. they would have, I guess, their own interface.
Right.
Instead of Cordova.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So from a Ionic point of view, you really write it once, run everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
With a little bit of drawback in terms of performance,
mm-hmm.
But with the phone being more powerful and different browsers being more efficient, things eventually will kind of bridge that gap. Especially if you're running a business oriented application versus gaming or entertainment.
So you said a little bit of a performance thing, and mm-hmm. I guess that would have to do with some of the optimization of the mapping to native components.
There are different areas about performance. Some ones are about the HTML processing itself, so like page transition is one of those ones, animation is one of those ones. Those are kind of the long-lasting performance concerns many people have in terms of running things more on the browser versus running purely on the native side.
Mm-hmm.
So. That's one area, and the other area is that somewhere in the JavaScript, the processing part of it, many of the previous generation of the JavaScript framework or the applications are written and compiled in a way that may not support the fast execution or fast loading, and which also brought into another area in terms of the current Ionic 2 or Angular 2. They have ahead of time compilation, mm-hmm. which speed up the page loading in many different folks. So yeah, that's one area.
It sounds pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I've heard a lot of very interesting arguments, I mm-hmm. think, for some pro-native, some pro, a framework like mm-hmm. Ionic or maybe React.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder, have we seen any trends or anything to suggest that going forward there'll be a clearer choice? Like, it still seems like it really depends on what you're building and maybe the team composition, what your goals are.
I totally agree. Right now, it's all case by case. There is no silver bullet that kills all. My general criteria for selecting a native app versus a hybrid app, or even whatever technology you use, basically is, like you said, what's your product roadmap, what's your business case, what's your team composition, and how well you want this product to be well, the customer, right? So if you really are building something requires lots of user interaction, or you want to build something with the new out-of-press features from that particular phone or particular generation of the OS of the phone, then native probably is your best choice to go into. You require, if you require mostly just a business-oriented app, just going through a business processing, not overly using the phone capabilities, then normally hybrid would give you a better return on investment and in terms of a faster market as well. And also in terms of team composition or the technology maturity, let's say in the hybrid app development, there are also people are more, if you are really want to have safe bet, the React JS or React Native has been pretty popular for quite a while, then it's a safe bet you go for. But if you want to invest into the next generation of the technology, then you go something newer. For example, Ionic 2 is one of those ones.
Very cool.
I've actually been wondering, I think especially for people that develop mobile stuff, one of my big questions is, how many mobile devices do you regularly carry on a daily basis, and what are they?
Well, now I have 6 or 7 devices. I normally carry 1 or 2, but in general, you do need to have at least 3 or 4 pairs for devices for, assuming that you only do iOS and Android. If you want to do Windows or BlackBerry, you have to multiply that as well.
Are those relevant platforms? Do those tend to be relevant platforms, Windows or BlackBerry?
It has a very low market market share, so I tend not to target those market at all. My current plan is, my recommendation has always been target the biggest market share platform, web, including progressive web app, iOS and Android, in case you are looking for a mobile-oriented user interface for a product. And talking about the different devices, at least you need to have one for just pure testing. Basically, you don't have to push into a store whatsoever, and that's pure for your own testing. And then you have more for a pre-release alpha beta testing device, and then you have to have the real production one that you also see how it really works in production. And it's always suggested to have a tablet versus a mobile phone in case your target audience or your product's user interface are also available in those two different places.
So you need multiple devices
yes.
to test different versions of your app, different bug fixes, things like that
yes.
concurrently.
Yeah.
And then you also need, of course, the different platforms that you might have and
yes.
the different form factors.
Yes. You multiply by that is quite a hassle, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, there are some of the services actually available online. South Lab is one of those ones, and Google, and I can't remember what are the other ones. They have basically what they offer is a test lab. You can deploy your app into their devices, and they'll run the test script for you. So reduce the level of requirement in terms of how many devices you really want to have, especially when we're talking about Android devices. There are tens of variations out there.
Yeah, I guess with Apple, at least you have the standard set of sizes.
Correct.
But still, I mean, with so many devices, there's, are you supporting, how far back are you supporting?
Yeah, for Apple devices, there are good and bad things about it. It tends to be every time you have an iOS major release that's a break something, then you have to really focus on and hammering out all the different things, issue a new patch or a new version of it, mm-hmm. and also the iOS store publishing period has always been longer than the Play Store ones. Mm-hmm. So that's the inconvenient part of it. The convenient part of that is Apple has been pretty good in terms of pushing people to use their latest operating system. So when you look at the division about the newer, the different version of the iOS versions, that's, I think, everyone is mostly above 8 and 9 nowadays. Okay. You can see that statistics from the iTunes store.
So is there a particular platform that you you choose? Is it Android or iOS, or what's your favorite device and why?
My favorite device, I think lots of developers are choosing Android devices. My device has always been Nexus Siri. You have that the authentic Google flavor and also the latest update to whatever you have. So that's my choice, and the Android offers lots of flexibility in terms of how you can play around with it, which iOS is a little bit restricted.
So does your preference in personal choice affect how you might design some of the user interfaces, I guess, which can sometimes be different across mm-hmm. Kind of in the Apple universe versus in the Android universe?
No, actually, the short answer is no. Let me do a little bit of promotion on the Ionic as well. So the Ionic platform, since it's a version 1, it does bring you a same code base, but when it runs on different platform, it gives you that particular platform look and feel. That's one good part of it. Of course, there is another set of arguments saying, hey, you want to have a consistent look and feel regardless what platform I'm at for my users. I mean, it doesn't matter, right? But the Ionic at least offers you that particular feature you can use right out of box. So basically, with the same code base, when it runs on iOS, it looks like following all the iOS design specs in terms of the font, the different margin and padding, and how things are positioned. So it's a completely iOS app looking and feel. When it runs on Android, it follows the mature design. And everything is looking exactly in Android, like the different icon, different animation, different page transition. So that's what I really love about Ionic. So let's say you are running a startup. You only have very limited resources, but you want to reach out to a broader audience and have the first to market type of advantage. Mm-hmm. So Ionic and other hybrid development tools or frameworks help you to quickly test your idea and get it out to market and see how the people are responding to it.
So what if you wanted to access certain features of the phone? Like, for example, if I wanted to have a barcode scanning app for when I go shopping,
right?
Would I still be reasonably able to use Ionic to do that for multiple platforms?
Yes, you can. As I was saying, or we were talking about, that Cordova is a core part of the Ionic framework. Mm-hmm. In Ionic 1, what they do is that they have something called NG Cordova, bridging the Cordova JavaScript library into a Angular 1 oriented or style accent modules to access right away. Mm-hmm. And in Ionic 2, they have something relatively new following Angular 2 component design. And that is also accessing Cordova through the Ionic native, which using Cordova as the bridge to access all the hardware capabilities.
So for someone like me, mm-hmm. I haven't really done much mobile development. I've done very little with React Native. I attended a meetup and somebody did a walkthrough, so it was pretty cool. But
yeah,
and I've done a little bit with native Android with Java. But we actually use Angular at work.
Yeah,
I don't do any of the front end stuff, and I haven't touched it yet. But I've been thinking, that's probably something I should start picking up and having a look at. Would it be reasonable to jump into Ionic as my first Angular project?
Yes. The short answer is yes, because Ionic is built on top of Cordova and Angular. Mm-hmm. So if you have been using Angular, you know how Angular works. Moving to Ionic is like a very smooth transition.
Nice.
Yeah. May I ask which version of Angular you are using right now?
Yeah, we're using version 1, so mm-hmm. we haven't jumped to the new. I don't know if we ever will, because it seems like there's a lot of really big changes.
Yes.
But yeah, I'm not sure. It also seems to me that, and I don't know if this is true, mm-hmm. but at least anecdotally, it seems to me that a lot of people coming from particularly like a C-sharp background
right.
tend to favor Angular, whereas a lot of people coming from more of a scripting sort of background like Ruby
yes.
or maybe Node, Python, tend to prefer React. I don't know that that's true.
That's actually true. Yeah, I think that's when you look at the design philosophy and patterns in those two different frameworks. Mm-hmm. You can see that React is very much like Ruby path of things.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at Angular, especially Angular 2, they are very componentized, they are strong typing.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much like Java and C-sharp design pattern and how the language being designed in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you're right. It does have a certain flavor in terms of, if you are a Ruby developer, you tend to favor a lot more and move on to the React side of things. But if you are Java or C sharp developer,
mm-hmm.
you're naturally being attracted on the Angular side of things.
Very interesting. Yeah, so we have a lot of people who come from more of a C-sharp background,
yeah.
and they're tending to favor that, whereas I have more of a Ruby background, so I wonder. But I think it's a really good, it's good to put yourself into environments where mm. you're exposed to more.
Right.
Or I think, at least it is, it's fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, you see how the different perspective people perceive the same
right.
subject matter and how they use their solution to address it.
Absolutely. All right, so other than the Ionic Vancouver meetup, if somebody wanted to reach out to you, what's a good way to get a hold of you, or are there other meetups that we might see you at around town?
Yeah, if you want to reach out to me, you can simply send me a meetup message, and you can find me on LinkedIn. Just type in Alamusi, A-L-A-M-U-S-I, you'll find me.
Nice.
Yeah, I do run another meetup.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Tech and the Startup Weekly. I have that. I'm running the downtown branch of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's every Friday. We're in downtown Horby and Robson, and around 10 to 20 people crowd talking about the technological stuff and also the startup things.
Oh, very cool. And where did you say you have it?
I'm running a downtown branch. Mm-hmm. The one is at Horby and Robson.
Okay, yeah. Very cool. Yeah, I'm surprised. I don't think I'd actually come across it before.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll have to take a look. You say it's every Friday?
Yes, every Friday. It was originally started in Richmond with a group of Chinese people.
Yeah.
And it had very good reception from the audience. And this year, they're branching it out. One branch is in Surrey, and the other branch is the one I'm running. It's downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's called Nine Cat. So yeah, just check in the meetup, and you'll see every Friday I'm there. I'm the organizer, and talking about all bunch of technology and the startup things.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, we'll have to check it out, and we'll make sure to put something in it in the notes below.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Alamusi, thank you very much for being on the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Very great talking to you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Check out our website, vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Rate and subscribe on iTunes. Much appreciated.
You can follow us on Twitter, VanTechPodcast.
Feel free to leave some comments below.
You can also hit us up on the YVR Dev, the Vancouver Tech, the VanTech Slacks. I'm at James.
And I'm at Drew. Special thanks to Same Room for hooking us up with an integration that allows us to have a cross-team Slack channel, VanDevs.
Do you have a meetup that you want us to plug? Email us, show@vancouvertechpodcast.ca.
Music by A Shell in the Pit from the game Parkitect. See you at one of the meetups
around town.